We've spent some time this hour talking about the search for harmony among the world's religions. It's not easy to put into practice. But maybe fiction can point the way. This year, Jan Martel won the prestigious Booker Prize for his novel Life of Pi. It's the story of an Indian boy named Pi who survives a shipwreck at sea in a small lifeboat with a Bengal tiger named Richard Parker. Pi gets by on his wits and with the help of faith. He's a practicing Hindu, Christian, and Muslim. Jan Martel told Steve Paulson that Life of Pi is a book that asks a lot from its readers.
What I want to do is push the reader until they're forced to make a leap of faith. Because to me, that is how religion works. Religion is not something reasonable, and we fail to understand religion if we only approach it in reasonable terms. And all religions work by having a degree of implausibility.
Now, it's worth pointing out that in your story, really the middle part of your novel, there is this 16-year-old boy who is out adrift in the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, stranded for 227 days with a Bengal tiger, a great, huge beast, a 450-pound tiger. And you go in great detail as to how this could work. I mean, not only how he manages to, how the boy avoids getting eaten up by the tiger, but how he survives, how he drinks water, how he feeds the tiger, all of that.
Yeah, I want it to be very much a realistic story. This is not a fable. This is not magical realism. I mean, there are small elements that might be called that, but essentially, no, it's an absolutely realistic novel. The tiger behaves in biological ways. And yeah, Pi learns how to survive with him. Just to tell readers who just can't believe it at all to start with, I should tell them that right away Pi builds a little raft, which he ties to the lifeboat, so the raft drifts behind the lifeboat, therefore establishing a certain distance between Pi and the tiger.
This boy we've been talking about, Pi, is a wonderful character. He grows up in India, and the odd thing about him, I guess, is that he establishes this hunger for religious faith, even though his parents are totally secular. And he not only becomes a Christian, but also a Muslim and a Hindu all simultaneously.
That's curious, isn't it?
Yes.
The reason I want to do that is Canada is a very, very secular country. And I wanted to talk about religion in an uncynical, honest way. I was looking at mechanisms for living with evil. How do we deal with evil? How do we take it? How do we understand it? How do we live with it? And after all, we do have to live with evil. You know, people die. People die in horrible circumstances. Injustices happen all the time. So I was looking for something to deal with that. And I thought, why don't I have a look at religion? Because for all the flaws, for all the things that are wrong with organized religion, one thing you can say about it is that it does have a very clear perspective on evil. So I thought, okay, I'll look at this. Surely if religion has been around for 5,000 years as far as the Jews are concerned, 2,000 years for the Christians, 1,300 years for the Muslims, surely there must be something grander afoot than mere patriarchy, sexism, etc. So I decided to take them seriously, to pretend I made a leap of faith, to pretend I had faith, to see what was good in those religions.
There's a passage in your novel where Pi explains a bit of his philosophy on faith, and I'm wondering if you could read that.
Yeah, sure. It's at the end of chapter 7. This is Pi speaking. I'll be honest about it. It is not atheists who get stuck in my craw, but agnostics. Doubt is useful for a while. We must all pass through the Garden of Gethsemane. If Christ played with doubt, so must we. If Christ spent an anguished night in prayer, if he burst out from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? Then surely we are also permitted doubt. But we must move on. To choose doubt as a philosophy of life is akin to choosing immobility as a means of transportation.
Now, I read somewhere that you actually studied philosophy yourself, and that turned you into an atheist. You must have changed since then.
Yes, yes. The only prejudices I had were intellectual ones acquired through my education. And you're right, at university where I studied philosophy, and you know, one of the first things you do in philosophy 101 is look at Descartes' proofs of God, and you cannot prove the existence of God. It's ridiculous. So they're very good exercise to hone your mind. But of course, they're quite mistaken. It's trying to find a reasonable solution to something that doesn't have one. You cannot prove the existence of God by religion. Otherwise, faith wouldn't be called faith, but reason. But so, yeah, at university, I considered myself, I suppose, an atheist. But no, since working on this novel, I've realized that there's much more there than I realized. The texts, the foundational texts, are astonishingly beautiful, deep texts. And I also realized that the question of truth and falsehood misses the point. Faith is a matter of interpretation. It's how you understand life. And that's why I make a very, in this novel, I make a link between religion and storytelling. Religion, in a sense, works like a novel works, works like fiction. A good novel makes you suspend your disbelief. So does a good faith, a good religion. It makes you suspend your disbelief, and we call that faith. And once you have faith, whatever happens to you, you see through that narrative framework of religion. And so doing this research for this novel has set me on a pathway where I do see things in religious terms.
Are you saying that the act of writing this novel turned you into a person of faith?
Yes, very much so. And initially, so my viewpoint was absolutely from the outside, sort of like a zoologist studying a bunch of chimpanzees in the jungle. What exactly do these chimps do? What do these Catholics do? However, bit by bit, the beauty of the text moved me. The beauty of the ceremony. I mean, however awkward the singing may be, it's sincere. We're so cynical in our society. It's so hard to talk about religion, about goodness, about love, about the brotherhood and sisterhood of humanity. In our fast-paced, rich, cynical, glib society, it's really hard to do that. But once you make that effort, once you enter into an area of a space, like a church, for example, where you're allowed to do that, where you can do unreasonable things like fall upon your knees and be seen mumbling little words, once you can do that, you just feel better. I must say, now that I go to church and I still keep on going, that doesn't mean that I take in everything that the Church of Rome says lock, stock, and barrel. Absolutely not. However, you only truly understand something from the inside. There's a certain nobility to a life where you believe in these grand, grand stories that take our little stories and make them grander. It really ennobles a person to have these, just as in a sense like art does, just as a person who's read Tolstoy and Shakespeare, somehow his soul is ennobled. I believe it's the same thing on an even grander scale if you practice some quote-unquote unreasonable thing like religion.
Now, there's a passage in your book that addresses some of these questions when Pi has been out on the lifeboat for a long time and finally has a chance to think about matters of faith. And now, it's worth pointing out that the tiger has the name of Richard Parker. And I'm wondering if you could read this passage.
So this is chapter 74. I practice religious rituals that I adapted to the circumstances. Solitary masses without priests or consecrated communion hosts. Darshans without murtis. And pujas with turtle meat for prasad. Acts of devotion to Allah, not knowing where Mecca was and getting my Arabic wrong. They brought me comfort, that is certain, but it was hard. Oh, it was hard. Faith in God is an opening up, a letting go, a deep trust, a free act of love, but sometimes it was so hard to love. At such moments, I tried to elevate myself. I would touch the turban I had made with the remnants of my shirt, and I would say aloud, "This is God's hat." I would point to Richard Parker and say aloud, "This is God's cat." I would point to the lifeboat and say aloud, "This is God's ark." I would point to the sky and say aloud, "This is God's ear." And in this way, I would remind myself of creation and of my place in it. But God's hat was always unraveling. God's cat was a constant danger. God's ark was a jail. God's ear didn't seem to be listening. Despair was a heavy blackness that let no light in or out. It was a hell beyond expression. I thank God it always passed. A school of fish appeared around the net, or a knot cried out to be re-knotted. Or I thought of my family, of how they were spared this terrible agony. The blackness would stir and eventually go away. and God would remain, a shining point of light in my heart. I would go on loving.
It's Jan Martel reading from his Booker Prize-winning novel titled Life of Pi. Steve Paulson spoke with him.